This time of year, you're going to find me jigging for crappies off my father-in-law's boat, celebrating a successful turkey hunt, or just sitting on the back deck watching time go by with a quality cigar from Thompson Cigar. Thompson Cigar has been around since 1915, offering the widest array of cigars and cigar accessories at very affordable prices. Thompson Cigar offers your favorite brands like Swisher Sweets, Cohiba, Backwoods, and Monte Cristo shipped fresh directly to your door. Also, be sure to check out their 5-pack fever deals and join their value club for big savings. Visit thompsoncigar.com and enter the discount code SE at checkout for 20% off of all orders over $75. Thompson Cigar, quality cigars at affordable prices. You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
Sierra has all the best active and outdoor brands you need, from athletic stuff, like a full-court pickup game, swish, to athletic-ish stuff, like a half-mile stroll. Get those steps in! And for morning hikes up the mountain trail, good pace, to nighttime ghost stories from the camping chair. What a twist. Whatever level of active, Sierra loves it all. Head to Sierra or Sierra.com for the brands you want at the prices that let you do it all. From athletic to athletic-ish, Sierra's got it.
5 a.m., I'm up with a crisp Celsius energy drink. Running 12 miles today. Grab a green juice, quick change, and head to work. Meetings, workshops, one more Celsius, no slowing down. Working late, but obviously still meeting the girls for a little dancing. Celsius. Live. Fit. Go. Grab a cold, refreshing Celsius at your local retailer or locate now at Celsius.com.
Spring break isn't what it used to be. It's better. This spring, stay 3 nights and get a $50 Best Western gift card. Life's a trip. Make the most of it at Best Western. Visit BestWestern.com for complete terms and conditions.
This episode is brought to you by Peloton. Break through the busiest time of year with the brand new Peloton Cross Training Tread Plus. Powered by Peloton IQ. With real-time guidance and endless ways to move, you can personalize your workouts and train with confidence, helping you reach your goals in less time. Let yourself run, lift, sculpt, push, and go. Explore the new Peloton Cross Training Tread Plus at onepeloton.com.
You're listening to The Western Rookie, a hunting podcast full of tips, tricks, and strategies from seasoned Western hunters. There are plenty of opportunities out there. We just need to learn how to take on the challenges.
Hunting is completely different up there.
I harvested 26 big game animals.
You can fool their eyes, but you can't fool their nose.
300 yards back to the road turned into 3 miles back the other way.
It's always cool seeing new hunters go and harvest an animal.
I don't know what to expect.
If there's anybody I want in the woods with me, it'll be you.
Welcome back to another episode of the Western Rookie Podcast brought to you by Go Hunt. I'm your host, Brian Krebs, and today we're going to be kicking off shed season. We've talked a little bit about it, but it's March 15th as we record this. March for us whitetail guys is shed season. Like, this is peak shed hunting. I know for you guys out west, it's just starting, so I figured it's a great time to have you on. We got Hunter Hubbard on the call, shed hunter. You do a little bit of outfitting, it sounds like, as well. Just an overall Western hunter, but makes it looks like you definitely make use of the spring, picking up a bunch of antlers every year. So I'm happy to talk to you about shed hunting, man.
Yeah, I try get out as much as I can. Just became a father last fall, so trying to get out as much as I can this year. So
yeah, that's going to be tricky. Those early years, hopefully you can still get a little bit of time out on the slopes this spring. I feel like it'll be hard, like really hard right out of the gate, and then every year just gets a little bit easier. And all of a sudden they start getting a little older, they can start coming with, you know, just a little bit easier as every year. But yeah, that's a big change.
Yeah, it is. It's been an adjustment for me, so not being able to just tell my wife, hey, I'm gonna leave for the weekend, see ya. I kind of got to work around her work schedule and everything, so
yeah,
but making it work for the most part.
Yeah, I'm not a dad. One day I'm sure we'll have kids, and I don't know how I'll handle it. I'll probably be the kind of dad that's like, Well, they're like 3 months old. I'll just put them on my backpack and we'll just go hike, right? And my wife will be like, no, that's not how that's going to work.
If it's anything close around the house, here in Utah County and everything, my wife's totally okay with me taking her and stuff like that, as long as I'm not going through all the oak brush and trying to do stupid, crazy, steep stuff. So if it's foothills and all that stuff, she's totally fine with me taking her. So
yeah, maybe. I mean, you also got 6 months. That's, I mean, there's a big difference between 3 months and 6 months, or like a year. Yeah, like it's just training. Like the older they get, the heavier they get, the better training you are putting, you know, some weight in that pack. Yeah, no, for sure.
Oh, sure.
Here, you hold this antler. They probably can see great from up there too, you know.
Oh yeah, I think it'd be a benefit to have them be like, hey, this is what we're looking for.
Yeah.
Keep your eyes out and let me know what you find.
Yeah, that would be a little bit of a hack. I had a Sean Curtis on the podcast. He's an avid hunter and shed hunter from Wyoming, and I talked to him, I think it was last year, but I think he told me that, like, he did say for sure that him and his wife and their little kids make a habit of spending archery elk opener together. And so it's like him, the wife, like small children, one of them's in his backpack. I think one can hike, and they're just out there enjoying. He's like, I know I'm never gonna like have any success, but just to bring him out there, hear some bugles, everyone loves it. And then 1 year he actually shot a bull with his daughter on his back.
Oh wow.
Yeah, I think that's what he said. I should go back and, but like, how cool would that be as a dad to like shoot an elk with your 2 year old on your back?
That'd be pretty sweet.
For me, probably more realistically, I'm at full draw. He's just about to step out, and she's like, get him, daddy! And poof, takes off, busted.
Yep. I'm actually starting to put in for kind of out by my cabins again and stuff, because I used to do a lot of the Wasatch Front when I moved more towards central Utah and everything.
Oh, yeah?
So now I'm putting out towards more of my cabins so my daughter can be a part of it a lot more, because we have some property out there we lease from my dad's hunting company and everything like that. So hunt the hay fields for mule deer and stuff like that, and have my daughter be a part of it.
Oh gosh, that'd be super fun.
That's what I'm looking for probably the most this year.
Yeah, well, in those hay fields, I gotta imagine there's a lot of antlers in those hay fields, right?
Not really. They don't really shed there. They kind of migrate more towards the south of where all the property is. So I found a couple small deadheads and stuff around there just from some of the deer getting wounded, and they'll die kind of out on the edges of the field and stuff like that. Other people.
Yeah, I would love to one day be able to afford like a large parcel of land in the West, which is easier. And large is relative. Like we just bought a 40 here in Minnesota, which feels huge to live on a 40, like right next to a big city. But
yeah,
I'm thinking like hundreds of acres, maybe like as many as I could afford, right? But like I'm not thinking of like the 4/6 ranch, or you know what I mean, like I'm not going out there buy 100,000. But I think if it happens, I'm not opposed. But the thought of like having some land with like center pivots, I would build this place to like, I know like a lot of ranchers and farmers don't want elk and deer on their land because it's eating their hay and it's just a
burden. Oh, yeah.
I'd be the opposite. I'd be like, I want the entire county to winter on my property, and I'd love to go out with a ranger and just fill the back of the ranger in like a day with the family. You know what I mean? Like
awesome.
Basically plant like center pivot alfalfa fields just to find sheds in the spring.
Oh, that'd be killer. That'd be awesome. We used to have on some of the property, was because the elk aren't really known to be around there. And one of my posts on Instagram, it's the video of the big velvet bulls and everything.
Oh yeah.
They're hanging out on the field and everything like that. And I watched them with the kid I used to hang out with a lot that used to live out there. And we watched them for weeks, just wishing that
they'd stuck around
to find his sheds, or if we could draw the tag for out there, because it's a limited entry out there.
And yeah,
like, it'd be so cool. But didn't get lucky and the bull disappeared, and I've looked since 2017 to try to find the horns for that bull, and I can't turn him up. I think he may have got poached or someone got him, and they're just, I've never seen pictures.
Yeah, that's a bummer. I mean, the Utah, like, there's so many things about Utah that are crazy, like the size of the elk is out of this world. Like, everyone likes to say Arizona's got the world's biggest elk. I don't know. I'm torn.
I think it's between three different states. I would say it's between Nevada, Utah, and Arizona. And I think it just depends on the year mainly. Arizona kills consistently, I think, some of the bigger bulls. But I think it's just neck and neck between those three states where the biggest are. And I think that goes with some of the mule deer also. I think Arizona's got Utah beat, and I think Nevada has its moments to kill the monsters.
Yeah. Well, Arizona had the freak bull, right? What was it, like 458? It was just astronomical.
Oh, the one that Jimmy Jones killed?
I don't know his name. But yeah, the big one. It was like four years ago.
The triple brows on it and everything like that. I think, yeah, if that's the right bull, then yeah, Jimmy Jones killed some monsters out there and everything.
The one that Mossback guided, like they had like 19 people watching it. And
we might be thinking of bulls. The one I was thinking of is the one that A3 killed with Ryan Carter.
Oh, no, I've had Ryan Carter on this podcast, but Ryan Carter was a part of this bull. I thought it was called The Freak, and it was out of Arizona, and it was like a 458. I think it was 2019 or 2020.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, yeah. A3 was the ones that guided with that one.
Okay.
And Ryan went with them and everything.
Oh.
That bull is just stupid. I don't even know how to comprehend.
Yeah.
Pictures don't do it justice, nothing. Like.
Right. It was like, what, 20 inches bigger than the previous world record or something? It was crazy. So, like, Arizona's got that bull, but I would like to know, like, which state, because that's unrealistic, and any state could do that, right?
That's bad.
Like, that archery world record out of southeast Montana was, like, 430. I mean, it was a monster. So, like, every state can have a fluke. I want to know, what would mean more to me is which state has the most 380 pluses that hit the dirt every year. That's the metric that I want to see.
Yeah, for sure. And
I think Utah's could be there.
Yeah, I think Utah's definitely in the running for that, for sure. But that's hard to say. I mean, there's a lot of states in the West that pull some good bulls. I mean, New Mexico's doing really good, too, I've seen in the past. And
Colorado has just enough that there's like a 400 every year in Colorado.
Yeah, Colorado produces.
Montana's got some giants.
Montana.
I would put this out there. I think, like, per capita, North Dakota, like, per the tags they give out and, like, the quality of the elk is, like, really high. Like, if you draw a North Dakota elk tag, you're almost guaranteed an opportunity, if you put your work in, an opportunity at a 350 plus.
Wow. Yeah. I haven't even looked at North Dakota or anything.
It's
like
all
that.
Resident, though. It's only residents. Non-residents can't even apply. Oh. You can buy a raffle ticket for a tag, but you can't apply. Okay. I got super lucky and got it my first year, and I shot a 354. Wow. But I had a 380s to 390s. That's originally how I got in contact with Ryan Carter, because I was watching all of his posts on Instagram and stuff, listened to every podcast with his name in it, because I was, you know, got this tag and I'm like, I need to figure out how to find big bulls.
Yeah.
So I found this bull and it was a clean 7x8. It just had, like, instead of 1/4, it had like 2 on this side and 3 on that side. And they were all like 15 inches ish, plus or minus, like 15 to 20.
Yeah.
Like, not super long fourths, but they weren't like just kickers. And his beams were super long. And I started adding it up and I'm like, I'm looking at everything and I'm like, I feel like this bull is like close to 400. So I sent Ryan videos through my phone scope of it. And I'm like, he'll never respond, but if he does, I'll know. And he's like, he sends me a voice memo. He's like, sorry, I'm driving right now, but that's a huge bull. Like, every time I look at him, he gets a little bit bigger. I originally thought high 380s. Now I'm thinking high 390s. You never know. You know, he's like, you never know how it goes. Like, just put him on the ground and measure. But either way, he's close. Like, and I'm like, it's my first elk. I've never shot an elk at this point. Obviously, I don't care if he's 380 or 402. I'm going to try to shoot him. But I lost him. Unfortunately, I spent 9 more days trying to find him. Cold front moved in. I switched and hunted a different area where I'd seen more elk. This bull walked out. I'm like, I'm also not passing a 350 class bull either.
No, yeah, for sure. Especially first elk. I mean,
One, it's this bull's big. So he's 354 and he only has a 34-inch spread.
Oh wow. So he's narrow then.
Pretty narrow. I mean, he's big enough that to me he doesn't look narrow. He doesn't look wide.
Yeah.
But he's got like one beam was 56 or 57, the other one was like 53 or 54. His mass up by his fourth was like 9 inches. Down by his bases was like 10. And it was like all the way through, it was that much mass. Yeah. He's solid. I mean, he's a 350-inch bull and he's not wide. So he's just, everything else is stacked.
Yeah. And so, I mean, nowadays it seems like 350 and up is kind of like what everyone's wanting and stuff,
which is the stupidest thing. And we talk about it all the time on the podcast. I shot a 279 6x7 in Colorado, and that thing was big. Like, that's a big bull. And I'm getting it shoulder mounted. Like, a 280 is a big bull. No, like, I agree with you. It seems like everyone wanted a 300-inch bull for the longest time. And now it seems like on social media, 300 is not even big anymore. It's like, oh, it's a 300. Like, that's where the base starts. Like, if you even say you're going to shoot something smaller than 300, everyone's like, yeah, come on. You know, 320, 340, 360. And I'm like, with a rifle, sure, maybe if you do it every year, you got lots of time. But, like, for me coming out, I got 5 days pretty much to put it down. So even with a rifle, like, I might not shoot a raghorn. Actually, right now, I probably would shoot a raghorn still, because I've done rifle hunts where I don't even get a shot opportunity at a bull. Mm-hmm. With a bow, like, I'm going to shoot a fat calf. If it's legal and it's there, like, that calf's in trouble.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, it's so hard to be an out-of-stater and be that picky.
And
hey, folks, we are in the peak of application season right now, and I hope each and every one of you draws a tag out west this fall. You all know my favorite tool for drawing tags in the West is Go Hunt Insider, and that's because I use it on every single tag I've ever drawn and every single hunt I've ever gone on in the West. Right now, during application season, I'm using Filtering 2.0 daily, and I'm using the Draw Odds tool to make sure I can draw each of the units I find and that I'm interested in. And I really love the Hunt Planner tool because I can make a plan for an application later this spring or even multiple years out where I can save all the units I'm interested in, I can add notes, and I can get all the research I've done into one spot. So when that application comes up either later this spring or out next year, I have all the information I need to make a decision. Later this summer, I'm going to be diving deep into the Go Hunt maps using their 3D mapping and all the layers they have to find water sources, access points, glassing knobs, and especially the species distribution layers, where I can find where the summer range is, the winter range, and I know I'm hunting the right parts of my unit for the season I have a tag for. The best part right now, Go Hunt is offering a massive spring sale. From March 24th through April 7th, which is only 2 weeks, they're going to give you $100 of gear shop credit when you sign up for Insider using the code WESTERN. That's right. $100 of credit in their gear shop when you sign up using the code WESTERN for the next 2 weeks. This is perfect timing if you're going to be doing your Colorado applications or your Montana applications or even your Wyoming deer and antelope later this spring, because there's never been a better time to get Insider. You've been hearing me talk all about the great tools and how I'm using them to get successful in the West, and now you're going to get $100 in their gear shop to get these same tools yourself. So go over to Insider, go over to Go Hunt, check it out, look at all the tools that are available for you with your Insider membership, and I promise you, you're going to be really happy. Use the code WESTERN to get your $100 of gear shop credit and get some new gear this year, but most importantly, use it to draw more tags and have more fun this fall.
I've been pretty fortunate, like, with guiding and stuff like that. I've got to see a lot of big bulls and be a part of some stuff with my dad guiding some of his clients and everything like that, because it's all family run and operated and stuff like that.
Right.
So I've been a part of it, and my buddy gives me crap, and same with some other people. They're like, oh, you're not going to shoot this? And I'm like, I don't know. I've been ruined, I guess you could say, being a part of all that.
That's a completely different situation. Like, if I was in your shoes, yeah, I would probably be pickier. Yeah. I live in the state. I spend all year on these animals. I know what's here. I have all kinds of confidence. Like, I have all season to get this done. I'm not up against a shot clock. And so it's like, I'm the same way with whitetails. I haven't shot a whitetail in 4 years because I just don't want to shoot a smaller whitetail. I don't want to shoot a two-year-old anymore. I want to watch the deer on our farms grow bigger. And I've been always chasing, you know, that 4 or 5-year-old for the last 4 years, and it just hasn't panned out. You know what I mean? Like, I'm that way with whitetails because I have all season to do it.
Exactly. And when I'm – because I have a brother that lives in Minnesota, right, kind of by Detroit Lakes and everything.
Oh, cool.
So when I come out there, I'm like, he sends me pictures of all these whitetail, and I'm like, dude, first one to come across, I'm smoking. I've never killed one. I'm going to smoke the whitetail. I don't care which one comes across.
Yeah.
Not the big one, of course, but like, I get a little forky whitetail, like, I'm going to shoot it because I've never done it. It's something cool. Be with my bow. Like, why not?
Yeah. No, it's all kind of what you have to work with. And so, but either way, like, I'm never going to shame anyone for shooting something. Like, you shot it, unless you told me, like, over and over again, like, I don't want to shoot a little one, I'm not going to shoot a little one. And, like, and then, like, you make a mistake, then I'll be like, I mean, I won't shame them, but I'll be like, hey, like, that's not what you said you wanted to do. Like, I feel like you didn't do what you wanted.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I don't, like, there's nothing you can do at that point. And it's not like, hey, do you want me to spot for you in the future? Because that, like, I'm not going to be that guy, but it's just like, if I feel like you wanted that, like, you just wanted to punch your elk tag, you just want to bring an elk home, it's like, great, you shot a spike, man, it's legal, you shot an elk, like, that's awesome, you know what I mean? Yeah, and, like, 280 is a big bull. It is a big bull. Yeah. Like, I mean, anyone that says it's not big enough probably hasn't shot a lot of elk. Or they're like Ryan Carter, and it's truly not big enough.
Ryan's on another level.
He's got clients that are paying him a lot of money for a specific thing. Right. You know what I mean? Like, so if he's like, shoot that bull and it comes out at 280, he's going to be disappointed as well.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I kind of went through that same thing. Like, I have goals set for myself, and like my buddies and stuff, they're like, well, you've never killed an elk for yourself.
Right.
Well,
that's where I hate people saying, like, having benchmarks. When they're like, and I want a 300, it's like, you've never shot an elk. Like, you've never even seen one down range.
And so I'm kind of like, well, I don't want to just go shoot the small elk. I want to go have the chance at a trophy. So I'm going to take my time, draw the best unit I can. And just when I can, like, I still buy over-the-counter tags here in Utah and stuff, and I'll go with my buddies and stuff. But I have the hope I'm going to find kind of like that little hidden gem, I guess you could say, on the over-the-counter units and stuff.
Well, I would say, so there's two thoughts to that. Like, there's the one guy that's like, no, I only want a big one. I'm going to wait until I can draw Arizona or Nevada or Utah or some of these nice units, right? And they don't elk hunt for 15 years and then they draw it. Well, first of all, unless you're going guided, good luck filling that once-in-a-lifetime tag with no elk hunting experience.
100%.
On the flip side, you can still do that and then go hunt every year in Colorado, in Wyoming, in Montana. Like, not, you can't, some of these states you can't go back to every year, but you can hunt elk every single year. I've been able to draw an elk tag, or it's like, this year is the first year I'm not going elk hunting because I'm choosing to go antelope with my wife instead. But you can elk hunt every year, and I'm building points. I got a lot of points. I'm about to break 100 points across the West for elk, deer, and antelope. Ooh.
Oh boy.
Like, I'm still, the long-term plan is to still hunt some pretty magical places, but at least I have 20 elk hunts under my belt when that time comes, and hopefully I'm a little bit more successful.
When you have that giant 400 bull eventually step in front of you, you're not as nervous.
Oh man, do I want the opportunity at a 400 so bad. That North Dakota tag wrecked me for like wanting giant bulls, and I don't think, like, it's not something that I can just set my mind to and achieve unless I just start stacking pennies away and hunt with someone like Ryan Carter. But even then, it's not a guarantee. Like, I could say, like, hey, Ryan, I got enough money for the tag. And he's like, dude, I don't know if I'm going to have a 400 this year. Just flat out, I don't know if I'm going to have one. I didn't have one last year. I don't have anyone close. Like, you know what I mean? So then, like, you wasted all this time saving and doing this, and it's not even an option. Like, it's not like you can just go do that.
Exactly. So it's a lot of just luck too. I mean,
you
just gotta have the luck and on your side with it and everything to turn up the elk and deer antelope for any of it.
I would settle. Well, it's not really settling, but I would also like scratch the itch by finding a 400 inch set. I don't know what's harder, but I would love to do that too.
I've held a couple of them. My dad has I think four or five that all break four.
Really? Sets or antlers?
Sets that he's picked up.
So do you have, because you guys guide and have like probably a lot of either personal, like private land or lease land, I'm assuming you guys probably have like trail cam pictures of all these bulls and you kind of know like which bull it is?
No, actually the areas we shed hunt all public. We don't run a lot of cameras in there anymore. We used to, but with Nevada's new camera law, we kind of don't do it anymore because they have to be pulled by, I think it's July 31st.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so same with Utah. You can't run the cameras past July 31st, I think it is, for both of the states.
Oh, so you're just kind of guessing at, like, how the bases form and, like, how wide, or you're like, I don't know. So, he's, like, 360 without a spread, so he's probably 400. You know, like, stuff like that.
Oh, yeah, I mean, we kind of just go off of, like, kind of what, like, I think the average is, which is, like, 40, 45 inches for the spread.
Yeah.
But I mean, the fours and the fives on these bulls are like pushing 18, 20 inches that my dad has.
Yeah, that's a big four and five. I remember when I was shooting that that North Dakota bull, I was on my rifle. I had heard a bugle. I took off after it. I was a little bit late, bugled out of, like, I basically parked the truck, got ready. I was like, might as well throw a bugle up. September 8th, I'm hunting with a rifle in the Badlands. Right. It's like the same exact, you know, that picture you've got on Instagram of your set, you're holding the set pinned at the top. It's like that topography with maybe a little bit more grass, not as like much hill, like it's only up or down 200 feet. And like those same, like it's not junipers, but it's cedars, but it looks just like that. Like it's really open. So imagine hunting country like that in the rut with a rifle on a place where there's like virtually no pressure. I didn't see a single other elk hunter on my trip.
That would be stellar.
And there's huge bulls everywhere. And so I bugle, I hear one, so I go after it, and I'm going up and down. All of a sudden, I see these two raghorns. I'm like, ah, shoot, it's just two raghorns. And this was like the hunt where I'm like, okay, I've never shot an elk, but I'm also not shooting a raghorn because this is, it's literally once in a lifetime. It's not even limited entry. I can't apply again. And so
true.
All of a sudden, I'm watching these bulls, and all of a sudden, I hear this bugle, and I'm like, wait, neither one of those bugled. They didn't even move, so there's another elk here. And so I go up and over, I see the herd, I see this huge rack just go over the rise, the next rise, right? Like 400, 500 yards out. And so I'm like, holy crap, that's a big bull. So I go up and over another one. I get to the spot where I'm at the top of a, like a clay thing, like a little clay hill. They're out 350 to 400 yards. All of his cows are kind of sprinkled across this like open cedar meadow thing. So I can't get any closer, and he's just destroying a cedar tree. All I can see are his fourths and fifths, right? And so I text my brother, because he's a huge elk hunter too, and he was in church. It was a Sunday. I didn't really realize it was a Sunday at 9 a.m., but I text him. I say, I got a giant bull, shooter bull at 400 yards, raking a tree, no shot. And he goes, how big? And I said, 10-inch fourths. And I'm like, and I sent that, and then I'm like, oh, shoot, typo. Right. And he replies, like, I'm not sure 10 inch fourths is a shooter, you know, for your tag. Like, that's not that big. And I'm like, sorry, 10 inch fifths. And he's like, oh, that's way different. Right. Well, I was wrong. It was 17 inch fifths.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. So it was a big bull. But that's all I could see. And I just made a really, like, that's how I thought I shot him thinking he was going to be like 330. And he turned out to be 354.
That's better. It's better when you shoot them. You think they're going to go through like 330, 310, and then you measure them and they're way bigger. You're like, oh, this is even better.
Well, that's rifle hunting, right? It's a long ways away. It was a 375 yard shot. But that's also me, like, not, I don't live around elk. I don't see them all day long. Like, I can look at a whitetail plus or minus 5-10 inches. I'm usually right on the money, unless something goofy going on, right? But the same goes when we shoot bulls with our archery equipment. Like, I've watched my brother shoot two bulls and I'm like, man, that's a good bull. Like, that's a solid satellite bull, right? We walk up and it's like a mediocre slash big raghorn, right? Like, they always look bigger to us because we don't live around them and we don't see the true giants that often to like level set ourselves. And so I think that's basically what happened. It's like just new to elk hunting, and I shot a bull that was big, and I knew it was big. I just couldn't, you know, too much adrenaline, too much whatever. And so the best part about this thing is my taxidermist was like, hey, man, I'm not going to be able to get this out of my basement, which also means you're not going to get it in your house either. how would you feel if I cut the antlers and then put pegs in them? And I'm like, dude, I love that idea. I don't care if it's ever officially, it's not going to make book anyway. And I don't care about having official score, but now I can pick these suckers up and like hold them like they are sheds. This episode is brought to you by Steelhead Outdoors. Now, everyone knows that Steelhead Outdoor safes are the only American-made fire-insulated modular safes on the market. But you might not know that Steelhead Outdoors also carries a full line of handgun lockers, pistol boxes, and even custom vault doors. So whether you're looking for a locker to store your concealed carry when you walk in the front door, or a pistol box to mount underneath your nightstand, or even if you're looking to secure an entire doorway in your home and create a safe room, Steelhead Outdoors has a solution for you. You can tell the guys over at Steelhead are gun owners because they have the gun owner in mind when they design their products. Their handgun lockers are just the right size to store modern-day handguns with lasers, optics, double-stack magazines, and even a backup gun. While their pistol boxes are the perfect size to mount underneath your bed, your nightstand, or even in your vehicle. And when it comes to a custom vault door, they have designed a panic lock and emergency release so you can easily lock and unlock your vault door completely from the inside, meaning you are always safe but never trapped inside. Go to steelheadoutdoors.com to check out all of their security options and pick the right one for you. And that is cool.
Yeah. The brown set I have pinned that I'm holding, that set, I ended up glassing that up. Oh, shit. It was probably 400 or 500 yards away. And I had the one spotted, didn't even know about the other one. And I get over there, I'm on the ridge, and I look down, and that's where I found the other side. It was laying in the tree in the rub. And I'm like, oh, sweet. And I didn't know they were set until I got up there.
Yeah, that's a big set, too.
He went 375 broken.
Yeah. What, did he break the back end of his write off?
No, he broke the two on his.
Oh yeah, right. I see it now.
Broke his front too.
Yeah.
And the cool thing about that though, we have trail cam pictures because that area we used to hunt a lot of before they took it out of the unit and turned it into a hams unit. We used to hunt that part of it pretty heavily and everything. And we have trail cam pictures of him not broke and everything else. And we had some of the clients turn the bull down, and I'm like, I'm glad you guys did turn him down because I got the sheds off of him now.
So they turned down like, so that he would have been like 380 at least, maybe 390.
Yeah, I think he probably would have been close to the like 380 mark. I mean, I don't know how much he's missing off. I think he's maybe missing like 3-4 inches.
Well, he doesn't have to miss much to go from 375 to 380.
Yeah, exactly.
And he's very typical. He might have made book.
Oh, yeah. He, I mean, the little devil tines, the one's, I think, 3.5 inches, and then the other one's, like, I think just right there at 3 inches or something like that with the devil tines.
Oh, so they would have counted.
Yeah.
For the most part. Because they're even. Yeah.
So it's just, that's the biggest brown set I've picked up. So I got pretty fortunate to pick that up. So
That's cool. Man, I want to find those big browns so bad. The problem that I have is, first, it's not easy to get out there, which I could do it. We went to New Mexico last year with a buddy, Stephen Walker, and we had a blast, and he finds a ton of sheds. One year, he found 370 sheds between him and all the people he brought out, but he just does it all year long, right?
I haven't even come close to finding that many sheds in a year. I think the most I ever found in a year with my dad was, I think, 100.
That's still a lot. And if they're elk sheds, like, that's a huge pile.
It was between deer and elk, and there was 2 400 sets that year, and he found a 202 set of deer sheds that actually we think came off of one of Randy Ulmer's archery bucks that he killed in Nevada.
Well, that's awesome. Yeah, I don't know. I'd take 100 sheds and 2 400 sets over, like, 700 chocks and raghorns. I don't know what Steven finds some big sheds too, but
100%.
Yeah, no, that would be crazy. I just
with the better quality.
Yeah, that would be amazing. And that's the problem. It's like from the Midwest, like, I could go out, but like theoretically, if I'm doing it alone and not meeting up with buddies, which I could maybe keep doing, but it's hard to like hey, bring me to your best spots and let's find some big elk sheds, right? It took me so long to learn places and like get good. And yeah, I could stumble across a lucky brown here and there, but to consistently get good at elk sheds, like, it's so hard to come from the Midwest where it's like, that's where I always ask people, like, how does someone just pick a spot on the map when you don't live there and like find sheds, like not find 400s or 380 sets, like just go out and find something. Is it, because I feel like it's pretty hard a lot of times.
So me and my buddy are doing it this year. We're finding some new spots to hit in Nevada with the opener and stuff.
Yeah.
So we're just Onyx and just kind of looking at the South Slope, see what it looks like, and just doing the e-scouting. And it's just 100% gamble that we may find something, we may not. And it's just hope, I guess.
Yeah, I suppose that's one way to do it. Like, I could start... I tried to find some elk sheds in North Dakota after I shot my bull because, like, there's some big elk here, but there's not a lot, and it's they're a lot of times they winter on private, which kind of sucks. But I could do Montana, eastern Montana. I could do Wyoming. Like, those states would be a lot easier to, like, get to start there. I don't know. Maybe just try to find more time each year. But have you ever used Scout to hunt for shed hunting?
I haven't. I've heard a lot about it. My buddy Wes from Rising Shed uses it.
Yeah.
And I have some other buddies that use it. I've never used it personally. I'm mainly on Onyx, and I have so much stuff on Onyx. Trying to transfer it over would, I feel like, just be a pain.
I got the solution for you, man. So I've had Brendan Labrum, who is the co-founder, him and his brother, I think, founded it. But he's one of the founders of Shed or Scout Town. I've had him on three podcasts now, two of this one and one on my entrepreneurship podcast. And we were talking to him, and I said, like, hey, I said the same thing. It's like, I've been using Onyx. And I like Onyx. There's nothing wrong with Onyx.
Yeah,
but Scout to Hunt has so many cool features specifically for shed hunting, like match ratios, and you can match up sheds and draw correlations between like where you found each half, shed efficiency, like how many sheds per hour are you finding. It's like, if it's really high, that means you should slow down and stay here. If it's really low, it's like you're not in the hot spot. Elevation bands, all kinds of stuff you can like adjust your track width, so you can like do 10, 20, or 40-foot track widths. So if you're really trying to grid something, you can see like where you've gone and where you haven't really easily. And I said, like, I got so many pins in Onyx. And he's like, well, you can transfer them. The only problem is Onyx transfers all their pins out as X's so they don't come in as shed pins. And then we have like right side, left side, all these different things. And I'm like, or elk, moose, deer. Like, we have all the shed apps that Onyx just has the one icon. And I was like, well, could someone in their Onyx app just select like all of their whitetail sheds? Because for me, like, I know if it's in Minnesota, it's a whitetail shed.
Yeah, exactly.
And then when I import them, just like the Scout to Hunt app just asked me like, hey, what kind of sheds are these? And I just select whitetail sheds and they all come in as a whitetail shed. And he's like, that would be super easy. And so I told him this last year because I just had him on the podcast this year. And he's like, hey, remember that idea you told me? And I'm like, nope. And he goes, well, it's live. It's good to go.
All right.
I think he said that. So yeah, there's a lot of cool stuff. So it gets a little bit easier to transfer your stuff over now.
Yeah.
So I love it. I'm using it. I actually have the beta version of it to help test out some stuff. I can't obviously say anything that I'm seeing in there, but
exactly.
No, it's a sweet app for shed hunting. It is my go-to. It's $30 a year, which is pretty cheap. It's my go-to forever now for shed hunting.
Yeah, I do Onyx with the elite membership. So, because I go to so many different states, I do Colorado, Wyoming, Arizona, Nevada,
and you're still gonna have that for your hunting. Like, I still use Onyx for my hunt. I use it to check who owns my properties around me, like who my neighbors are. Like, I still have Onyx. I still have Go Hunt. Go Hunt's the title sponsor of this podcast, so I use their apps a lot when I'm Western hunting. But yeah,
I thought about using Go Hunt and stuff like that. I've heard a lot of good stuff about it.
I love Go Hunt's map for hunting because there's a lot of cool features and folders you can create and stuff. I only use Onyx really now for doing, actually this sounds really weird, but for like food plots here at home, because Onyx has better like drawing tools, basically like paint, right? But I can draw like shapes and lines and different things a lot easier in Onyx for my, but out West I use Go Hunt for everything. You can make folders for hunts. You can store everything. I mean, it's really, I like Go Hunt a lot. Plus, it comes for free with their insider service, and I already have, I'm already using that no matter what anyway for all my draw odds and all, to find new places and new units to apply for and all that stuff. So,
yeah.
The nice thing is it comes free.
I'm with, I do the Epic Outdoor membership too. So my wife's like, well, how many do you need? And I'm like, you want the honest answer?
Yeah. What's Epic? I've never heard of Epic. Are they like a draw odds thing?
Yeah, so it's the draw odds. They give you, so it's kind of like a Hunt and Fool.
Oh.
They send a magazine with draw odds. You can get on the thing, their website, and see the odds, and they kind of tell you like what to expect in the unit and stuff too.
Okay.
I have a good buddy, Jason Carter, that hooked me up with it and everything. I met him just through guiding and stuff. My dad's known him forever, so I became friends with Jason through all of that.
And he leads, that's his business?
Yeah, him, I can't remember the other guys' names that are with him. Okay. They'll come to me eventually.
Yeah, it sounds a lot like Go Hunt. Like, Go Hunt's got the filtering tool, where you, like, it has a unit breakdown, public land, private land, all the draw odds, dates, what to expect. They do a lot of articles, the gear shop. I like, right now, I'm really liking Hunt Planner. That's one of the tools they have where you can go in and you can create like a hunt plan. So I just created one, 2024 Wyoming Antelope, and I can browse through a bunch of units and be like, nope, nope, nope. And then I sit the ones I do like for now, I save into this hunt plan. And then when my wife is off work and we're like, obviously we're going to do this together, I was just going to weed out a bunch of bad spots, bad units first. I can pull it all up and there's the 8 units that I saved just in one spot. I can make notes. It's got all the highlights, trophy potentials, public land stuff. I like that because it's all in one spot. Like, I don't have to remember, like, oh, was it unit 46 I was looking at, or was it unit 56? I can't remember. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, that's cool. That's a cool tool. I like, it's, I don't know, I spend so many hours researching different spots to hunt and different types of hunts. Like, I really want to do a saddle hunt for elk. Like, an early season, like, late August, maybe early September, waterhole saddle hunt. Because I'm a big whitetail hunter. We hunt out of trees. Like,
yeah,
how cool would it be to be sitting in a tree and an elk walks through?
I've never had that experience. I know a couple guys in Utah that have used the saddles and stuff like that, like Eric Chesser and some of those guys have. And I have a buddy that does it on the Wasatch, but I don't know. I'm normally just sitting on the edge of it and waiting in a blind. I think the tree stand thing would be awesome though, or a saddle.
Yeah, I mean, they're lightweight. Like, I think we're getting a couple saddles from XOP, and it's like the platform, like their lightweight platform's like 2.5 pounds. Their sticks are like 6 pounds for a set. Like, you're not talking a lot of weight, especially if you're like planning on packing out an elk. Like, it's pretty much nothing. Yeah. You don't have to pack as much gear if you're not hunting and walking around all the time. Like, it's a different hunt for sure. Like, I always would pick a screaming bull on the ground 20 yards in front of me in the peak rut, right? But I think this is just another fun way to hunt elk that I'd love to try out and just see like what it's like to basically stand hunt elk, maybe like run and gun in the morning, like hear the bugles first thing, track them kind of where they're bedded and be like, okay, they're bedded here, here's a good water source, like we can't get them to play, it's early season, so they're not really rutting anyway. It's like, well, we know they're up there, we're gonna set up on this water hole.
Yeah, for sure, because they'll come there eventually.
You think so? Yeah.
Yeah.
Might take a while to find some active water sources, but they're out there.
If you can get it during the rut, they'll be wallowing and everything too. So
especially the pre-rut. I feel like once the rut really hits, though, they quit wallowing. Like, our group has been archery elk hunting almost every year for the last 9-10 years. I've done, like, the last 7, and we're always third week of September. And we hardly ever see any active wallows anymore.
Really?
But I think that's because we're starting to get into that peak unit, like that peak time when they're, I don't know, one for sure. My buddy shot at a bull. It was too far of a shot and he had a clean miss. But he was midday open meadow wallowing, like on a hot day. Like, I was like, kind of weird. I don't know. That elk might have had rabies. He wasn't doing normal stuff. But usually the wallow activity is kind of quiet by that third week. I think it's because they're starting to get harems, they're starting to get cows, and they're, like, more focused on that, obviously.
Yeah, they're getting their herd and everything. They're kind of already got their little group going and everything to where they don't have to worry about fighting off the other bulls as much, maybe.
Yeah, probably. I don't know. I mean, it'd be nice to know what they're thinking. There's a lot of days that I could have probably shot bulls if I would have known what they're thinking. But yeah, no, that saddle hunt thing, I just looks interesting to me. Like, I just think it would be so much fun.
Yeah, my buddy, we did the OTC last year. He killed his first decent bull. I think we're actually going to tape him this evening and everything to see what he goes. But we did the stealth hunting through the trees and everything. And
oh, like no calling, just snuck in on him. Like,
no, they would call and everything like that. We just cow call and stuff like that. And this bull was still wallowing in everything. But I mean, we got within, I'd say probably 40 yards, and my buddy shot. There were three of us, and it was rifle. And I'm just like, I will never do this again. I'm just like, I don't like hiking through all this deadfall, not knowing what I'm chasing, just going after a bugle. I'm like, I don't know if I can do this, because I grew up hunting the desert.
Oh, so like spot and stock stuff.
Spot and stalk, where I know what I'm going after and I know my advantages, disadvantages, going through the sage and the cedar trees and stuff. But my buddy loves the stealth hunting, and I'm over here like, I'm dying. I am just dying.
Well, right, deadfall now sucks no matter what, even if you do know what you're going after.
That made it even worse, because he ended up killing the bull and we got it all cut up and everything. And I'm like, I'm not coming back in here. We are taking this all out in one trip.
Which is doable. Like, it's heavy, but with three guys, it's doable.
Three guys. So he carried the head, I think the front shoulder or hind quarter, and then his brother-in-law carried a hind quarter, and then I carried hind quarter, all the scrap meat, back straps,
yeah,
the heart, my gun, all my other stuff, and I ended up destroying my horn hunter pack halfway out. Like, my whole load shelf on the bottom ripped apart.
Really?
And then it's pitch black and we're trying to get out of there, going through a swamp, all this deadfall, and I'm just like, I will never do this again. I think you've just ruined me for this hunt, this type of hunting.
Sounds like you're a lot closer to me and my saddle theory than you are to the...
Oh, 100%. I think I'd sit in the saddle more than trying to fight the deadfall and chase just the random bugle.
Yeah.
Because I was just like, I got up there and I'm like, you know what? At this point, I don't even care to shoot it. I'll let you two shoot this bull.
Yeah, I hate deadfall, man. One time we got deadfall so bad, it was like an open meadow, but instead of grass, it was all huge deadfall, like old growth deadfall. And it almost looked to me, and I know this didn't happen because there's no way it could have. It almost looked like a huge flood brought like all of these logs in and dropped them, because there was no branches anymore. There was no limbs. It was clear open, like bluebird sky. And it's just these huge logs that are like 4 feet, maybe not 4 feet, but some of them were massive, massive trees. Bark, everything. And it's like hundreds of acres of this. And we had to cross it. And we eventually just like hopped up on top of them and ran a log, and then hopped up on the next one and ran that, then down to the, because going over and under them, sometimes there are like 10 feet of logs stacked up. I don't know what happened in this spot. It must have been like a tornado or something like 10, 15 years ago.
Dang.
It was the craziest. I've never seen anything like that before.
But we had to go a mile and a half just to get to the road.
Yeah, that sucks.
It took us 5.5 hours.
Yeah, that's just some bad deadfall. One of my favorite things about Maverick hunting blinds is the ability to customize the blind for your needs. With the Booner Blind Series, you can customize your window orientation and get all vertical windows, all horizontal windows, or even half and half. You can even build your blind so all your vertical windows are on one side for those close-range archery shots, and all your horizontal windows are on the other side for your long-range rifle shots. And when it comes to customizing the look of your blind, they've got an entire line of accessories. They've got options to camouflage tint your windows and stencil kits to make your entire blind camo, and bow holders and gun holders for the inside of their blind. They've got everything you need to make your blind perfect for you. Click the link below and head over to maverickhunting.com to get all the accessories you need to customize your Maverick blind.
We'd hit a flat spot, all deadfall. We'd be fighting it, and then we have to go down the hill, all deadfall in the pitch black with our headlamps trying to fight it.
Yuck.
And I'm just like, this is miserable. Like, this is just miserable. I'm like, I don't know if I want to do this again.
Yeah, so put that in perspective. I shot my North Dakota Bowl. It was like a mile and a quarter, mile and a half one way to pack them out. And it was kind of terrain like that picture with you with that 375 bull.
Yeah.
I did. Obviously, I went in, shot him, looked at the bull, took some pictures, went back to the truck, met my parents. My parents were in the unit just like rangering around, you know, ATV and just to have fun and be like around with me, but they weren't hunting with me. But I'm like, hey, this is a like easy enough walk that you guys could come in and see this bull. My dad's never seen a giant bull on the ground before. So went in and out, got them, changed the pack up, went in, butchered it. My dad took the back straps out. I took a rear and a front on the first pass, which is 146 pounds because I weighed each bag when I got back to my house.
Yeah.
And my mom, I just gave her a trekking pole. Like, she didn't carry anything. And I was pretty much keeping up with them because they're like, they don't train for the mountains. They don't train for packs. Like, I told them, go slow. Like, yeah. I don't want you guys to like slip or fall or anything, even though it's not like crazy terrain. I went back in, grabbed another front and like something else. And then I grabbed a rear and trim meat. And then I tried to bring the head out all in the same day. Like, that's how easy of a pass it was compared to your 5.5 hours to go one way with a load. And the head was too much. I couldn't get the head. Like, it was wet. I left way too much hide and way too much neck on it. Yeah. It was unbalanced. It was like, I think I weighed that, and it was like almost 200 pounds. It was just unbearable. I had to stand at like a 45 or a 90 degree just to balance, and I'd take like 10 steps, and then I'd be burning. So, I dropped it, and then I think the statute of limitations is up. We brought the Ranger in and just picked it up with the Ranger because it, like, yeah, the farmers drive their Rangers all over and that stuff, but technically you're not supposed to drive them off-road for fires. Yeah. And I'm like, it's been raining for 3 days, and we're not going to start a fire. So we brought the Ranger in and got him out with the Ranger.
My mom, she drew her moose tag last year.
Utah moose?
Yeah, 27 years of applying and everything. She finally drew it, and my brother from Minnesota, he's like, yeah, I'll come out. Drove all night and then into that next day, showed up. So right before opening day, so he could come and hunt with us for the weekend. I had my buddy here, and we ended up having someone shoot a bull that we were after and everything. So that evening, it was the second to last day. My brother was going to be here and my buddy could help. And she's like, well, I just want to get a bull. I'm really discouraged. So we had a bull run right across from us in this big open meadow. And I'm like, my brother's sitting there going like this on the dirt road with the binos. That's a bull. So I haul ass up the road, and me and my mom bail out, and I have him take my truck and go around the other road and try to watch where he goes. The bull ended up stopping and started raking the trees and everything. And I had the bull come to 60 yards. I'm sitting there calling it in. He's coming closer. My mom's freaking out. We were able to drive the truck right to the moose.
Oh my gosh.
Legit cut a quarter off. Stick it in the bag, stick it in the truck. And we're like, you'll never have an easier moose hunt in your life.
So I'm really curious. Did you weigh the moose quarters at all?
We did not. We didn't weigh anything.
Shoot. I shot this bull. It's an 8.5-year-old bull. It lives where there's hardly a winter for elk. There's all kinds of grain and crops. There's no wolves. There's hardly any pressure. Like, this thing had no stress at all. It was huge. Like, the neck on this thing was like this wide. It was insane. My taxidermist said, hey, I told him, like, hey, I got to get this bull mounted. And he goes, oh, okay, cool. You know, I don't know if I'm doing elk anymore. The last guy that had an elk, he measured his cape. It was all off. And now I got this form that's way too big and they're hard to handle. And I'm like, well, that form might fit my elk. He's like, no, it's not going to fit. It's way too big. And I'm like, well, let's just in it measure. He's like, actually, it's a little too small, but we'll make it work. The elk was massive, right? It was grain-fed elk with no predators. Like, he had an easy life. They didn't migrate. It's a non-migratory herd. And so I weighed those quarters. Both backs were 82 exactly. Both fronts were 64 exactly. Each back strap was 20 pounds. The tenderloins were both 5 pounds. There was like 40 pounds of neck meat per side. Like, so I got all these measurements, right? And so when people talk to me about these 100-pound elk quarters that they're packing on, I'm like, no, like maybe the biggest of the biggest bulls or like Roosevelt's might have 100 pounds rear quarters, but like your average elk, your especially your raghorns, your satellites, your small six bys, they're not even touching 100 pounds.
No,
and so, not at all. And so that's why I'm wondering, like, what about moose though? Because like a Yukon, I'm guessing those suckers are way on the other side of 100 pounds.
Oh, I guarantee it. Like,
that's why I was asking about your mom's. Like, did you like how big was the moose and like what was the rear quarter like?
Oh, it was a big rear quarter. It took two of us to lift it into the bag and then two of us to get it into the onto the tailgate of the truck.
Which virtually no elk you've probably ever shot and been a part of takes two people to lift a quarter.
No.
Like, maybe if you're lifting it up to someone else's back. But yeah. every elk, you could, like, grab the bone, put your hand under, and get it into a tailgate.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you're saying, like, this moose, no way.
No, I think it was we were exhausted, too.
Yeah, that helped.
Because when we were unloading it, it wasn't as bad. But we were also, like, while we were cutting it up, you're trying to maneuver it different ways and everything like that.
I remember that feeling butchering my North Dakota bull. Usually it doesn't go as bad, but usually we butcher faster, and this bull got stiff on us. It was warmer.
Yeah.
And I remember it took like 3 hours because the hide on that thing was like an inch thick too. Like, I remember I was cutting it up to the horns, and the hide was like 1 inch between, like, here's red meat, here's fur, there's an inch of stuff in between it. And my knife was just going dull. Like, I was just like, it took forever. I don't ever remember butchering an animal where I was so sore when I got done. Like, my back was sore, all my muscles were sore. It took 3 hours. We started at like 10 and we got done at 1. And then I started doing all those pack out trips. And at 6:30 I called it. I did 3 full trips from 1 to 6:30. And then I'm like, I can't. I'm shot. I can't get this head out right now. We'll have to come back tomorrow. So I just left it there. I'm like, I hope no one finds it.
The bull we killed was a little bit smaller than some of the other bulls we had seen.
Okay.
But
still big.
We were scouting the one night, and my mom had bought a brand new side by side and everything so we could move on some of the dirt roads quicker and stuff. And so we had spotted one bull. And so we got down there right at last light just to see what he was when we were scouting. And he barreled through the trees, and he was bigger than the side by side. My mom lost it. Screaming at me and everything, and I lock up the brakes, and you just see this big shadow towering right next to us just running along it, and I'm like, that's a moose. Yep.
That's crazy. One of the things that I want to get into is do-it-yourself Alaska moose hunts. Like, hire a bush plane, find a spot, get flown in. Like, it's probably going to be $3,000 to $4,000 a person, maybe better if you get like a group.
Yeah.
But that beats 30-40 grand, right? And then it's like, the reason I want to do that way is like, I could theoretically do that 4 or 5 times in my lifetime and maybe get good at it, maybe shoot a couple moose, where it's like, am I ever going to save 40 grand to do this? By the time I save 40 grand, it'll be 50 grand. I might do it once. But like, when I get that money, like, what if I buy another whitetail farm instead with that money? You know what I mean? Like,
exactly.
Yeah.
You start thinking of all the other options, and I'm the same way. I'm like, I have a dream to kill a stone. And
oh, good luck.
I'm talking to people on how much that costs just to like see. And he's like, oh yeah, you're looking like 70, 80 grand. I'm like, not my lifetime, I guess. Well, hopefully I can just draw a sheep tag down here, or I'm pretty close to drawing in Nevada. So if I can draw a sheep tag in Nevada, then I can start putting in for this, the sheep guys, what they can put in for after they've killed one sheep, and hopefully I could maybe draw the stone.
I feel like your best chance at shooting a stone, like, here's a couple plays that will, like, someone could do. Number one, I think probably the easiest way to shoot a stone is go guide for a sheep outfitter for like 10 years and make it part of your payment plan that, like, you're going to guide for this long.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And then earn a tag.
That could work.
Which not probably going to be a good option for you living in Utah with a new family. So
no, I think my wife would put the stop to that one.
Or get very famous as an influencer, get a job as like a marketing director or like a collaboration with a brand, right? Where they're like sending you on this sheep hunt to get the content, right?
Yeah. Which, I don't know about that one either.
Not super easy. No, it's not super easy. Or just get really rich doing something else and just buy a Canadian hunt.
So that's my goal. I'm starting my own company and everything. So we'll see. Fingers crossed.
Oh, cool. What is it? If you can tell.
It's pressure washing.
Okay.
Concrete houses, all of it. So I just started that. And then I sell some of my buddy's permanent lighting. I'm starting to.
Nice. Yeah, that's so
maybe eventually one day, but I don't know if it's in the cards. So you
bring one of your employees, then at least it's a tax write-off on the company.
Me and him keep talking about that all the time. Me and my buddy Nick, we were like, well, hey, let's just be employees for each other's companies, and then let's go to Sonora, Mexico. It's a work retreat. We'll both go kill 200-inch mule deer and all that stuff.
I have a buddy that did I wouldn't say his buddy. He's a very friendly acquaintance, and he did a sheep slam with a bow, and it took him 43 days of consecutive hunting before he got his first shot opportunity at a stone. 43 days across, I think it was 4 hunts. So like 4 years. Like, so he went 3 years of like a 10 to 14 day backpack hunt without a shot opportunity.
And me being an archery hunter, I want to try to do it with a bow.
Well, you'd bring a rifle with you just in case.
100%.
You'd carry that thing, and if he's bedded and you're like, there's no way we can get closer than 200, I bet that rifle would be coming up pretty fast.
Oh, yep. I would already be laying down with the rifle saying, okay, here we go.
Yeah, so he didn't even bring a rifle. He's like, he's a very affluent person, very successful, built his own company that did very well. And then he said that was the hardest one. And then he ended with the desert bighorn. And he said that was pretty easy. I mean,
yeah, my dad's killed the desert. He shot it at 15 yards as it was jumping across the canyon. So he shot it in like midair.
With a bow?
No, his rifle.
I was going to say that's pretty impressive. Robin Hooding right there.
Nope, a rifle.
Oh, that's still pretty cool though.
Pretty cool to watch. That was pretty cool to watch. I just watched the ram's head just bash into the side of the ravine. And I'm just like, it just echoed because it was all rock that it hit. I'm like, that's crazy.
That would be crazy. No, sheep would be fun. I don't know. The other thing you could do, and this is probably the most realistic one. I don't know. Do you follow Randy Newberg at all?
Yeah, I do.
So he's just been doing some of these like lifetime hunts. And he talks about like how he's been able to do it. And he's like, every month I put $200 away. I'm an accountant, so I also invested it. I got some return on that money. And he said, after 30 years of doing this, like, I can afford. He did that one. He did the British Columbia hunt. And now I think he's doing Henry Mountains in Utah. I don't know what he's doing in Henry Mountains. But I suppose, like, that's just math if you stick to it. You know what I mean?
My mom's already trying to do the investment stuff. So I'm like, I'm all for it because I'm trying to, like, hey.
Get these hunts, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, but if you run the math on a mutual fund, you put that money in, like 30 years, you'd have it. I mean, I don't know, it might be 150 grand by then, unfortunately. But
that's the sad part. Everything's just getting more and more expensive for it. Hunting's so expensive. Shed hunting is even expensive to go out and
do it. The gas. Like, I feel like a good shed hunting rig is like an Impala with a roof rack. You know what I mean? Like, let's get 40 miles to the gallon, but find a way to get these sheds home.
Exactly. Side by side. I just pull the side by side out there now and just find the best spots and hike from there now.
Yeah, but still, you're getting like, what, 10 miles a gallon pulling that side by side out there.
Oh, yeah. It hurts me when I have to pull the side by side.
Yeah. So, no, that's what I mean. Like, the shed, like, I'm planning my first shed trip, I think, not this weekend, but next weekend. I'm going to try to go to the North Dakota to a whitetail spot I got. I'm hopeful. I don't know. I have no idea what to expect this year because we didn't get any snow in Minnesota at all. So, I don't know if there's going to be, if they're going to hold late, if there's going to be a ton of boot tracks. Who knows, but I love it too much to not go.
Yeah, that's me and my buddy were kind of like, well, it's been mild. Everything's kind of staying high too. So yeah. Hopefully that kind of has persuaded a lot of people not to go and do it.
But it's also been so easy to go that I bet a lot of people have too.
Exactly. I've seen a lot of boot tracks.
Yeah. So when you guys are talking about doing your new spot in Nevada, like, so this is how I would approach finding a spot to shed hunt in the West. Tell me if I'm on track. Like, yeah, good idea. Or like, yeah, you can try that, but you probably won't be successful.
All right.
I'd pick a state, and I'm not going to pick a, like, say it. Just pick a state. I'd find whatever information I can about elk wintering ranges for that state. I'd probably try to find where, like, there's bigger summer ranges that consolidate down into maybe tighter winter ranges, right? So, like, okay, they're going to probably be around here. And then I would go to, like, places. I'd look at what kind of winter we're having, like heavy snow, light snow. And I'd try to pick, like, an elevation band in a spot that has elevation options and lots of public land. And I'd probably pick, like, big south-facing, like, sage flat slopes type. I don't really want to shed hunt black timber. Obviously, most of the time, they're not in the black timber anyway. Yeah. And I would just say, like, here's a spot. There's, like, this is a winter range. There's lots of public. There's lots of, like, different south slopes, north slopes. There's lots of elevation options. We can go high. We can go low. We can try to dial in. Maybe after 3-4 days, we pick up a brown elk shed. Like, that's how I would do it. Do you think that's, like, worth, like, driving 1,500 miles across the Midwest to, like...
Yeah, I mean, you're definitely going way more in-depth with it than I am.
Oh, you're just, like, throw a dart. There you go.
Yeah, pretty much. Like, me and my... I'm kind of just, like, wing it. Let's see what we can do. Like, I find a good little range, kind of zoom in with my Onyx, see what kind of there, see, like, what kind of water's there and everything, and... Some of the property I have is right on the Utah-Nevada border, so I was able to go out and kind of see what the winter was this year and stuff like that, and it hasn't been too bad, too, so I'm kind of like, all right, well, they'll probably be a little bit higher this year and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But I also got to think, like, not everything was picked up last year, and last year Utah had one of the worst winters we've had.
Yeah, but there's a lot of deadheads out there.
Exactly. So I'm like, all right, well,
can't really pick them up in Utah, but
Nevada's the same way.
Yeah.
That's what sucks. So, but I mean, I'm like, so there can be stuff low, there can still be stuff super high because the past winter. So it's kind of like, I pick like a happy medium in the elevation, I guess, and just kind of say, I follow the sign a lot. So like, if you were to show up there and you didn't see a lot of sign and stuff,
yeah,
hike there still, see what you find. And then if you're not seeing a lot of the sign and stuff, you can always try to push to a different area.
Yeah, that's what I would, that's how I would do it. I might try it one of these years. I think it'd be a fun trip. Plus it's like my wife just loves camping and loves like being out in nature and hiking. And like that time of year, it's always fun. Like it's like 60 degree days. Oh, yeah. Like, so this is my typical shed hunting here in Minnesota. Typically I start really early and I'm shed hunting on snowshoes with like 2 to 3 feet of snow. 5 degrees, 0 degrees, sometimes it's 5 below. The coldest I've ever camped was in my pickup. My dog was with me. He was in the front seat. I have like an air mattress in my back seat, and it was 13 below.
Oh.
And so that's like my typical shed hunting.
Oh, yeah, because like Nevada doesn't open till May 1st.
Right.
Utah didn't have a closure this year. Wyoming, they just passed the new law. Where non-residents have to wait a week after May 1st.
Yeah, that was last year, though. They had that last year, too.
They did?
Yeah. I think last year was the first year, and they probably just restarted it. Yeah, and they don't drop as early. Like, our whitetails, sometimes they drop in January, so I'm out February. Whereas a lot of times your elk are holding into March, maybe even April, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
We've seen... My dad has video of a bull that dropped, I think it was early February. And that was one of his 400 sets. This was...
Which makes sense.
I want to say it was 2017 or 2018 when it happened.
Yeah.
So it was a while ago, too. And I haven't heard of any bulls dropping that early since then.
But he's an old bull. He probably has harder times in the winter. Probably, you know, there's a lot of stress, big antlers. Like, there's a whole bunch of stuff that probably happened versus, like, I've seen spikes holding into, like, almost the end of April in North Dakota.
Yeah, I've seen bulls and deer I've seen some 2 points and 3 points in May that still had their horns.
Yeah, that's nuts.
And so I'm like, well, sitting there watching them for hours, like, come on, never seen this happen. Just waiting for you guys to shed the horns.
Yeah, right at that point, you're like, one jump and they're off.
Exactly. So we'll sit there for a couple hours watching them, see what I can see.
Yeah.
Happen.
Yeah.
Like, all right, I'm done.
Yeah, so I think that would be my strategy. I might make like a YouTube thing out of it. Like, I'm going to go try to find an elk shed with no contacts, no permission, no experience. Like, I've never found one DIY, like self-guided. Yeah. When we went to New Mexico, we had a buddy that knew, like, he's brought us to his spots.
Yeah.
So that might be a fun video. Be a really relatable video to a lot of people, probably.
Oh, yeah, because, I mean, a lot of people will go shed hunt new states and everything. It's become so big with the selling your horns now and
yeah,
like that. And the YouTube, Instagram, like, that's all my stuff is now, is just
shed hunting. I really want to see
horns hunting.
I wanted to see, so I want to get Ben on the podcast, Shed Crazy Denimati on. And we were trying to get it lined up last year. He was going to swing through Minnesota for his shed tour. And then, look, the weather happened. He had to push south. It didn't work out. We were going to do an in-person podcast and shed hunt some of our family ground to get him his shed. But I really want to see him hit that Sheds of America, one shed in every state. I think that'd be so cool.
That'd be so cool. That'd be so cool to see him succeed with that.
I don't know if he's doing it again this year. I haven't seen a lot of content. It's kind of early yet. I don't know.
Yeah. My buddy Wes from Rising Shed, he's got some cool stuff that he wants to try to do too with it and everything.
I had Wes on the podcast last year, and we're working out trying to get a podcast in this year too with Wes.
Yeah, Wes is really cool. He actually just lives right down the road from me.
So really?
We found that out a couple weeks ago. He came up and kind of saw all my collection of stuff. I have some pretty unique, crazy big horns and everything. So
cool. Yeah, that would be fun. So yeah, that's what I might do. I don't know, down the road. I have a shed dog we found out last year in New Mexico. He is not a hot weather shed hunter because he got heat stroke and then got really sick and then destroyed the backseat of my truck.
Oh, that sounds awful.
Right before we had to have 20-hour drive back home.
Oh,
so I had a bottle of scent killer from Whitetail Season still in my toolbox. We unloaded that bottle. I mean, we did the best we could, clean everything up. We threw, like, I have really good seat covers, so we ripped those out, threw them in a garbage bag. I was ripping stuff out of my truck trying to clean it, and then we just cleaned everything we could the best we could. We had wet wipes and paper towels, and then we used a whole bottle of scent killer in my pickup. And between that and just getting accustomed to it, we made it home. But my wife sat in it one time after I cleaned it. She's like, this truck reeks.
Yeah, that was just getting near my truck after the moose hunt. It was just awful. And it was in the bed of the truck that we had in the coolers and everything, the moose. And I was like, oh, this moose stinks. Because they were rutting.
Yeah.
So I'm like, this is just awful. My coworkers would walk by my truck. They're like, your truck stinks. And I'm like, thank you. I drive home with it. It parks in my driveway. I know it stinks. Like, it's awful.
Yeah. No, I have a beard oil company called Bull Elk Beard Oil. And the number one question I get about, like, scents and stuff is, like, do you have a rutting bull scent? And I'm like, have you ever smelled a rutting elk? Like, they don't smell good.
Oh, no. speaking of the rutting elk, so me and my brother, one of his buddies, Cole, we were messing with him. And we put the cow urine on all of his sweat points on his backpack.
Ooh.
The bulls chased him. He had spikes chasing him down during the hunt.
Seriously?
Yeah, because he messed with us, so we decided to get him back. And
oh, man. I wish you guys would have got that on film, man. That would have been the best YouTube.
I wasn't there. It was those two together, and they were like, well, yeah, this spike just kept following him. He couldn't get away from the spike. Because as he was sweating, the smell was getting worse.
Yeah. That's probably like a hack. Everyone's like, oh, haha, sucks to be him. And then they're going out next September just dousing this stuff. And why?
Exactly. I mean, it would be a good way during, like, especially like Utah, you're hunting the beginning of the rut here for archery.
Yeah.
I mean, if you can put up with the smell, you might be able to kill giant bulls with that little hack now. I don't know.
Especially if it's not you, put it on your buddy.
Exactly. Like, hey, I'll next to my buddy, as long as he doesn't have the tag, I mean, I'll douse him with it, and then I don't have to worry about the smell. It goes home with him.
That's funny. I've thought about doing like a slingshot launcher with some like water balloon full of scent for things like predator hunting. Like you just like launch it and then it, because like a big bull's probably going to be like, yeah, that smells like a cow, but I can also smell the human there. Like, nah, yeah, I'm not that interested. Right.
Yeah. Cause he had spikes coming after him. Yeah. I mean, it's,
but if you're doing the saddle hunt thing, you could probably like take that elk and then just shoot it like, you know, upwind and sit over that water hole, and you got scent that's not mixing with you.
That may actually be a good idea too.
Yeah. Until you shoot it and it doesn't explode, it just bounces down the hill.
Exactly. It just bounces down the hill from you.
Rolls away. But no, man, Hunter, this has been a great podcast. We're coming up here just over an hour, but I'm super excited for shed season after talking to you. I really want to find some giant elk. I hope I see some pictures of you with some giant elk, which is a lot more realistic. Yeah,
well, if you're ever out this way or want to try to get a trip planned, I mean, I got some good areas. I mean, I know Nevada pretty well, Southern Utah. I'm starting to branch into Arizona for the big deer sheds and everything. So,
heck yeah, man, that'd be a great trip one of these years. I've always wanted to shed hunt Utah, Arizona. I did New Mexico last year. I found some accidental sheds like in Montana and Wyoming. I
think
it's just a blast, man. I want to find one of those big browns. I want to find it in the sage country too, where you see it a ways off.
Arizona's got my attention the most with the big mule deer. My mom has the biggest deer shed that I have possession of at 116 inches.
Oh my God.
So just the one side. So I'm like, I got to beat that eventually, but I don't know if I can anymore.
So yeah, that's a big shed. That my Stephen Walker's got a match set that scored out at 208.
Yeah. So that big set is 213. That's pinned on my Instagram and everything. So
that's crazy. Speaking of Instagram, before we break, give everyone your channel names, any place you want to send people to follow along with you, see some of these giant sheds we've been talking about, and just where they can connect with you.
My Facebook, Hunter Hubbard. And then my Instagram is Hunt_Hubbard. It's public, so you guys can follow me. I'll follow all you guys back and everything. So
awesome. Well, thanks for being here, Hunter. We'll put links below, and thank you for listening, folks.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.